listen, listen, listen. God is speaking to us.
Kairos Milwaukee United Church of Christ presents Joy is Resistance, the sermon by the Reverend Gene Randall Bodman, presented on Sunday, May 6th, 2018.
As many of you know, in an earlier chapter of my life, I was an academic. In fact, for a while, it looked like I would be one of those perennial graduate students that haunt the library stacks and never make it out into the sunlight of a profession or a calling. The kind that sails through their classes, gets over the hurdle of language exams, and finds the hours and weeks of study for comprehensive exams a perverse kind of fun. The kind that puts together a great dissertation proposal, wins the approval of the whole department, and then reads and reads and reads, leaving no byway unexplored, but very rarely ever writing. In the midst of all that reading and happy researching, but very little writing, my first child was born. My academic reading was suddenly interspersed with books on child rearing and children's books, and my writing seemed completely non-urgent, certainly not urgent enough to break through sleep deprivation. When Caleb was about 4 months old, I had a meeting with my academic advisor. Now, we lived about an hour away from the university at that time, and this was my first outing of more than 45 minutes without the baby. When I arrived, my advisor Heather was on the phone, and before I could step back and out of the way, she motioned me to wait there while she wrapped the phone call up. And as she came over to greet me, I noticed that her face was full of concern. "Are you okay?" she asked. "Yes, I'm fine," I answered. "Why?" suddenly wondering if I had remembered to change out of the blouse that Caleb had irped on. "It's just that, well, you're moving," she said. And I had been. I was doing the baby bob and weave. You know it. The motion that all people who tend to babies automatically do, whether the baby is still in their arms or not. I fell out of the habit of imagining myself as a future faculty member, teaching, researching, publishing, and I began to think of myself as just a student, always a student, really a mom. My academic self-confidence was at a low ebb. Even when we moved to Colorado and I was hired, miraculously, as an adjunct instructor for the following semester at CU Boulder, still I doubted myself. I was thrilled to have the opportunity, but I understood that an adjunct instructor is the lowest of the low on the academic ladder. In fact, it may not even be on the ladder yet. And I wasn't entirely sure I could handle even that. Later that spring, after I had been hired but before I had begun teaching, I went back to Philadelphia to attend the American Academy of Religion meetings. I was leaving a late afternoon lecture, trying to decide to brave one of those wine and cheese parties where it is traditional for young and aspiring academics to go and hobnob with the elite in the hopes that they will say something intelligent and be noticed. As I hovered on the edge of the room, my new boss, the chair of the Religious Studies Department at CU, swept me along and into a circle of the luminaries in my chosen field of American religious history. The people whose books I had read and studied and pored over, my odd, nerdy girl platonic crushes. "This is my colleague, Jean," he said. Colleague? I had never been so honored or elated by a single word. He introduced me to those people as his colleague. Well, from then on, I was determined to live up to that not yet earned compliment. The first day of classes, and that compliment nourished me, I must tell you. The first day of classes that fall, I found the room for my very first lecture and set my books and notes down on the lectern. In an enormous theater-style classroom, and I picked up my list of 196 students, and I promptly dashed to the restroom to splash cold water on my face. But time was short. I couldn't linger. So I looked at myself in the mirror, and I squared my shoulders, and I said to myself, Fred Denny thinks you can do this. And I did. And I loved it. I imagine that this is something of the feeling that Jesus' disciples felt when he said to them, I'm no longer calling you servants. From now on, you are my friends. You are my friends because I've shared everything I've heard from God with you. I chose you. I want you to make your home in my love. Abide there. Love each other and know complete joy. And when you are in the world and you cannot see me, stand tall. Remember, I have called you friend. You have everything you need to be my people in the world. I am still with you. And so Jesus says, even though the heavens may seem to fall over the next few days ahead, we remember that all of this is taking place during his farewell discourse, even as I am handed over and sent down into the valley of the shadow of death, remember, this is what I want for you, and what I promise you, and what I give to you, joy. My joy in you, and your joy complete. Now, I am wondering, when was the last time that each of you experienced joy? I don't mean mere pleasure, although there is nothing wrong with simple pleasures. And I don't even mean happiness, but the kind of out-of-body, bolt-from-the-blue, unlooked-for, unearned sensation of just joy. I invite you to close your eyes and go back to that moment. Imagine the space that you were in. Feel again the temperature of that place. Notice whatever scent was on the air. See once more the faces of the people who were with you, or the landscape that surrounded you. And accept again the gift of that joy. In his memoir, Surprised by Joy, C.S. Lewis described joy as having one and only one thing in common with happiness and pleasure. The fact that anyone who has experienced it will want it again. I doubt, he wrote, whether anyone who has tasted joy would ever exchange it for all the pleasures in the world. But then, joy is never in our power, and pleasure often is. Well, I think I agree with C.S. Lewis that joy is not within our power to produce, but it is absolutely in our power to find and to accept or to ignore. Sometimes I suspect that we reject joy because we worry that we haven't deserved it, or because we know that someone we love is struggling at the moment. Sometimes we recognize that beyond our circle of beloved ones, people all over the world are suffering from war and deprivation. And in the face of the evening news, relishing our joy feels somehow unseemly. Sometimes we become discouraged down to our very bones by the state of the world, which, again, last week seemed disheartening and absurd to the point of exhaustion. It can seem self-indulgent or even somehow childish and willfully ignorant to open our hearts and minds to joy in the midst of the sobering facts of life. But the world that Jesus inhabited was no less corrupt and violent and unbalanced than ours. Jesus knew that his very own death was approaching. And yet he said, I want my joy to be in you, and I want your joy to be complete. So I encourage us to claim our joy, to be open to its arrival, and to seek it within ourselves, buried deep within us, along with that spark of the divine, that doorway to oneness. It requires courage to be open to joy in the face of real life, both the everyday weariness and the deep suffering that comes along to each of us. But perhaps we can allow our suffering to overcome our reluctance. We can allow our very suffering to break down our resistance to joy. Because it takes energy also to resist. I think of Kate Bowler, the Duke Divinity School professor I often quote. After finishing her first book, A History of the Prosperity Gospel, and being diagnosed with cancer, she wrote a memoir entitled Everything Happens for a Reason and Other Lies I've Loved. Professor Bowler recently said, "Since I got sick, it happens every day. For a minute, time begins to pool, and suddenly everything is bright and clear and wonderful. Every day, she is in touch with joy." She has also written, "What if being people of the gospel means that we are simply people with good news? God is here, we are loved, it is enough." Joy can come in and fill up all the spaces around us in our times of suffering. Opening ourselves to joy can also be an act of courage and resistance in the face of a world off kilter. Because let's face it, sometimes it just feels a whole lot easier to be joyless in this world. Right about now, joylessness is the path of least resistance. You can sink your roots right down into hopelessness and lob negativity out into cyberworld without even leaving your home. You can protect your heart with snarky tweets and sarcastic Facebook posts and roll your eyes at the lies of all the politicians and say, "Who cares? Nothing will change." Instead of abiding in love, which requires the work of loving others, you can just dwell in hopelessness and negativity. It feels reasonable. But reasonable and true are not the same thing. Opening our hearts to joy makes us feel foolish or vulnerable. But it is also our calling. I think we need a new lens. I think we need to learn from the Black church tradition that joy is our gift from God, and it is a form of holy resistance to the powers that be. In a beautiful 2015 essay titled Black Joy is Black Resistance, Episcopal priest Broderick Greer wrote about this long tradition of resistance fueled by joy. I quote him at some length. He writes, "During the brutality of chattel enslavement and the era of white-dominated sharecropping, Black people wrote and performed songs of resistance, reaching into the inner recesses of their suffering to uncover bombs of joy. They sang of gospel trains and sweet chariots coming to rescue them, and of not having long to stay here. The tradition carried on throughout the civil rights movement and is alive in the Black Lives Matter movement, this tradition of joy as resistance." He concluded, "Oppressed people often know something that oppressors do not. Oppression is untenable. The economic, social, and political subjugation of people of African descent in the United States cannot last forever." This, of course, is counterintuitive to those who are convinced that there is no end in sight for state-sanctioned violence against Black people in the forms of police brutality incongruous black imprisonment, and low-performing black schools. And yet, black joy remains. In the words of Terence Laney, undead, unchained, and fearless. It dances in the face of armed officers, sings in the presence of death, and shouts down systems of terror. Black joy is the spirit of liberation that inhabits black bodies in church services, defying order of rows of pews for spontaneous joy. We will not be crushed because we know that while the history of white supremacy is long and triumphant, white supremacy itself is not the last word. Joy is. We too are called into that joy of resistance. We too are called to abide in God's love by loving our sisters and brothers. Let us be bold enough to let our joy be part of the resistance to empire in all its forms. For we know that neither white supremacy, nor antisemitism, nor greed, nor deceit are the final word. We know that God is present and that complete joy is our calling. And let the people say,
listen, listen, listen.